Welcome back, my Inklings, to Catawampus Readings, the podcast where beginnings and introductions are set on fire to see what's left when they're burned to ash. And before we get started, I wanted to let you know that owing to some technical difficulties in my brain space, this podcast will be on hiatus for the next little bit. You can expect the next episode to be available to the public on the 24th of June. Now, back to the fun part. Today's book is The City of Ember by Jean Dupreau, which I read a couple years ago when I was working my way through the library's entire collection of juvenile fiction audiobooks. Don't judge. I thought it looked like an interesting book, and as it turns out, my taste in cover art once again led me in the right direction. If you're not familiar with the book or haven't seen the movie, which I didn't know even existed until I started writing this episode, allow me to illuminate. The City of Ember was built as a last refuge for the human race. 200 years later, the great lamps that light the city are beginning to flicker. When Lena finds a part of an ancient message, she's sure it holds a secret that will save the city. She and her friend Dune must race to figure out the clues before the lights go out on Ember forever. The pitch from the back cover has several points in its favor. It's short, it's to the point, and it introduces the conflict with minimal focus on the characters. You might be frowning at the screen or the speaker or the ceiling right now and saying, "But Ink, you like it when the characters are introduced right away." And you're absolutely correct. I do like a quick character introduction. On the other hand, we need to keep in mind that in general, not always, mind you, but in a majority of cases, it's not the character that draws you into the story. You don't usually start reading Lord of the Rings because Frodo's personality intrigues you so much, and you don't begin watching the Blade Runner series because Deckard has such a deep and interesting character. You might come to appreciate those qualities once you're invested in the story, but what really began your attraction to a given story is usually the conflict. The One Ring needs to be destroyed and the world will be plunged into a new dark age. The replicants need to be hunted, but are we sure it's the right thing to do? One of the best examples I can think of is the TV series titled Once Upon a Time, the premise of which is that fairy tale characters are trapped in the modern world and have lost all their memories. We're not drawn into the story because tough love lone wolf bounty hunter Emma Swan has such an endearing character, because she doesn't. We want to know more about the fairy tale town and why no one remembers who they are. In the same way, we're drawn into the story of the City of Ember because the city is running out of power and only one person has a possible answer to the problem. In addition, we need to keep in mind that the pitch from the back cover of any given book doesn't need to give you the whole introduction. Its job is only to sell you on the story's appeal, not to tell the story itself. So let the book introduce its characters. The pitch is just there to tell you why the book is worth reading. 5 out of 5, well done with the pitch. Now that's settled, let's take a look at the book itself. As with many books before, this one has 2 introductions in a row. The first is in the form of a prologue titled The Instructions, and the second is the first chapter. I will be reading the whole prologue and part of the first chapter so we can get a good look at both of these and see how they work together. The City of Ember by Jean Dupreau. Prologue. The Instructions. When the City of Ember was just built and not yet inhabited, the chief builder and the assistant builder, both of them weary, sat down to speak of the future. "They must not leave the city for at least 200 years, said the chief builder, "or perhaps 220.
"Is that long enough?" asked his assistant.
"It should be. We can't know for sure."
"And when the time comes," said the assistant, "how will they know what to do?"
"We'll provide them with instructions, of course," the chief builder replied.
"But who will keep the instructions? Who can we trust to keep them safe and secret all that time?
The mayor of the city will keep the instructions, said the chief builder. We'll put them in a box with a timed lock, set to open on the proper date.
And will we tell the mayor what's in the box? Asked the assistant.
No, just that it's information they won't need and must not see until the box opens of its own accord.
So the first mayor will pass the box to the next mayor, and that one to the next, and so on down through the years, all of them keeping it secret all the time?
What else can we do? Asked the chief builder.
Nothing about this endeavor is certain. There may be no one left in the city by then, or no safe place for them to come back to.
So the first mayor of Ember was given the box, told to guard it carefully, and solemnly sworn to secrecy. When she grew old and her time as mayor was up, she explained about the box to her successor, who kept the secret carefully, as did the next mayor. Things went as planned for many years, but the seventh mayor of Ember was less honorable than the ones who'd come before him, and more desperate. He was ill. He had the coughing illness that had become common to the city then, and he thought the box might hold a secret that might save his life. He took it from its hiding place in the basement of the gathering hall and brought it home with him, where he attacked it with a hammer. But his strength was failing by then. All he managed to do was dent the lid a little. And before he could return the box to its official hiding place or tell his successor about it, he died. The box ended up at the back of a closet shoved behind some old bags and bundles, and there it sat, unnoticed, year after year, until its time arrived, and the lock quietly clicked open. Chapter 1. Assignment Day. In the city of Ember, the sky was always dark. The only light came from the great flood lamps mounted on the buildings and at the tops of poles in the middle of the larger squares. When the lights were on, they cast a yellowish glow over the streets. People walking by threw long shadows that shortened and then stretched out again. When the lights were off, as they were between 9 at night and 6 in the morning, the city was so dark that people might as well have been wearing blindfolds. Sometimes, darkness fell in the middle of the day. The city of Ember was old, and everything in it, including the power lines, was in need of repair. So now and then the lights would flicker and go out. These were terrible moments for the people of Ember, as they came to a halt in the middle of the street or stood stock still in their houses, afraid to move in the utter blackness. They were reminded of something they preferred not to think about. That someday, the lights of the city might go out and just never come back on. But most of the time, life proceeded as it always had. Grown people did their work, and younger people, until they reached the age of 12, went to school. On the last day of their final year, which was called Assignment Day, they were given jobs to do. The graduating students occupied room 8 of the Ember School. On Assignment Day of the year 241, this classroom, usually noisy first thing in the morning, was completely silent. All 24 students sat upright and still at the desks they had grown too big for. They were waiting. The desks were arranged in 4 rows of 6, one behind the other. In the last row sat a slender girl named Lena Mayfleet. She was winding a strand of her long dark hair around her finger, winding and unwinding it again and again. Sometimes she plucked at a thread on her ragged cape or bent over to pull on her socks, which were loose and tended to slide down around her ankles. One of her feet tapped the floor softly. In the second row was a boy named Dune Harrow. He sat with his shoulders hunched, his eyes squeezed shut in concentration, and his hands clasped tightly. His hair looked rumpled, as if he hadn't combed it for a long while. He had dark, thick eyebrows which made him look serious at the best of times, and, when he was anxious or angry, came together to form a straight line across his forehead. His brown corduroy jacket was so old that its ridges had flattened out. Both the girl and the boy were making a
urgent wishes. Dune's wish was very specific. He repeated it over and over again, his lips moving slightly as if he could make it come true by saying it 1,000 times. Lena was making her wish in pictures rather than words. In her mind's eye, she saw herself running through the streets of the city in a red jacket. She made this picture as bright and real as she could. Lena looked up and gazed around the schoolroom. She said a silent goodbye to everything that had been familiar for so long. Goodbye to the map of the City of Ember in its scarred wooden frame, and the cabinet whose shelves held the Book of Numbers, the Book of Letters, and the Book of the City of Ember. Goodbye to the cabinet drawers labeled New Paper and Old Paper. Goodbye to the 3 electric lights in the ceiling that seemed always, no matter where you sat, to cast the shadow of your head over the page you were writing on. And goodbye to their teacher, Miss Thorne, who had finished her last day of school speech, wishing them luck in the lives they were about to begin. Now, having run out of things to say, she was standing at her desk with her frayed shawl clasped about her shoulders, and still the mayor, the guest of honor, had not arrived. As you older Inklings will know very well, I like beginnings that open with interaction. It doesn't need to be fast or exciting, it doesn't need to be tense or risky, but I like to learn about the characters, or at least about the world, as soon as possible, so I know what it is I'm investing my time and interest in. I talk a lot about characters interacting with each other, but I don't often talk about the characters interacting with the world, which is a perfectly legitimate option for interaction at the beginning of a story, or anywhere else in the story. In the prologue, we hear 2 builders who are never given names or personalities discussing how the future of this city is to be handled, and we're informed in no uncertain terms that the residents of this city are expected to stay there no longer than 220 years. In the beginning of the chapter, we get to see Lena Mayfleet interacting with her world in the quietest way a child knows how, by observing the familiar things while she waits for something to happen. We are also casually informed that the residents of the City of Ember, owing to unfortunate events in the prologue, have no idea that they've stayed in the city longer than they were meant to, and the instructions for how to depart are lost. In addition to the big problem the audience now knows, and the characters are mostly not aware of, we get to see into the mind of Lena Mayfleet, who is obviously our main character. She says nothing, and for the most part, she does nothing, but she teaches us something about herself and about the world around her simply by how she passes the time when she's meant to be waiting quietly. Her clothes are ragged, her socks are too big, the classroom is very much the worse for wear, and the electric lights, which sometimes flicker to the consternation of the citizens, seem to be placed in just such a way as to be as annoying and ineffective as possible. These are observations I can easily imagine a child making, though perhaps not as articulately as they're presented here. We don't know much about Lena as a person, but the details that were given assure me, quite thoroughly, that she is a believable and complex character with the sort of features I would expect of a person I met in real life. All because this is not a description of a classroom, this is a description of how a child sees a classroom. That's all I have for you this week. The random question of the day is, if you could change the color of your bedroom walls without moving furniture or risking paint on the floor, what color would your bedroom be? Remember that Catawampus Readings is going on hiatus until the 24th of June, which is a Wednesday if I'm reading my calendar correctly. I will not be idle in that time, so if you have any suggestions for me in the interim, I would love to hear about them. Leave them in the comments below, or send me an email at inkfire.scribe@gmail.com, and I will add those suggestions or questions to my subjects for podcast list.
It's a real list, by the way. It's pinned up on my cork board right now. It's right there. You can't see it. Until next time, stay awesome, my Inklings. This has been your host, Inkfire, and you've been a very patient audience. I'll see you on the other side. Thank you for listening to Catawampus Readings. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. If you're interested in supporting Catawampus Readings and would like early access to new episodes, you can sign up to donate monthly at patreon.com/inkfire. Special thanks to our patrons, Corvus, Valkyrie, and Barry Marie.